This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk, and I've been chatting with Sir Robin Knox Johnson, whom you know as the first sailor to single hand around the world and the founder of the Clipper Around the World race, and his good friend, Sir John Henry McAnally, retired Vice Admiral of the Royal Navy. They each have a drink in hand, and this photo came up of the two of them back in 1965 when they were young officers in training and having a bit of fun in Paris. Go to sailsporttalk.com for the photo and listen in to the story.
Robin will recognize this vehicle because he wrote it too. It's a 1938 Dennis fire engine. And in the fourth year of their Royal Naval Officers training, we were split into groups of about 14. And each group did, in turn, a specialist course at one of the training establishments in mostly around Portsmouth, not only around Portsmouth, and naval air stations and so on. And we had as our course conveyance this 1938 fire engine, which we took to Paris. 60 people watched us park it. Here you see us, the members of X18 course, 1965-66. with our fire engine. And Robin can tell you a tale about it too.
Well, I can tell you, Karen, that we coincided with John's course. I was a Royal Naval Reserve course, Merchant Navy people, so we were doing a different sort of course. And we coincided with John's course. And we thought their fire engine was marvellous because we could climb on it, go to the local nightclubs, Pom d'Or, I seem to remember, John.
You do indeed, yeah.
And we go there, and about 2 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, we decide we'd better go back to Whale Island, the gunnery school, and we climb on this fire engine, about 40 young naval officers hanging on to it. And someone very stupidly rang the fire bell. And within seconds, we were surrounded by police cars, and they just came up to us and they said, "Young gentlemen, the good citizens of Portsmouth like their sleep. If you ring that fire bell again, we'll take you all in, and you won't be on parade tomorrow, and that'll be bad for your careers, won't it?" And, fairly drunk, I suppose, we all said, "Oh, yes, that's very serious. Yes, we'll take this seriously. So would you mind going back to Whale Island and not ringing that bell?" So we muffled the bell, and we returned to Whale Island. And I still remember that, John, and I suspect you were hanging on the fire engine at the same time as me.
I don't remember it at all. Robert.
Of course you don't. No.
That's a great story.
All right, thank you for that. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you on Sports Byline. It's Tuesdays at 9:40. This is when we check in, and how many other networks do this? A segment on sailing, and it's brought to you by SailSportTalk.com, and as always, co-hosted by Karen Lyle. And Karen, I understand that you and your guests, who we'll get to in a second, but you're actually in studio. So after more than a year, is it all spider webs and dust?
No, they've been keeping really good track of this. So it looks just like when I was here last and you and I did the show together in person.
Well, that was built in the Carter administration, and I think it looks the same from when it was built as well. But hopefully in a couple weeks, I'll be able to get back in there as well. Let's talk about your guest in studio, Eric Jones, a guest so nice, we're having him twice. He was on last week as well. Eric, I understood that you and Karen came over to the west side of the bay on a rigid inflatable that you use with Sea Valor for some of your search and rescue. Can you tell us a little bit more about that craft, please?
Sure. It's a 15-foot Zodiac Pro with a 50-horsepower outboard, and it took us about probably half an hour or so to come across this morning. It was a beautiful morning and a great way to start the day.
Did you freeze your tail off, Karen, or are you okay?
No, it was good. I'm co-host and I'm also adventurer, so this is just all in the course of a day. I've come over here on boat many times, right, Rick? You remember that?
Of course, yes.
We also had a guest who's with us in the studio. He's not on the mic, but you can tell us about who went with us and drove today, Eric.
Sure. friend who's a captain at a local fire department came, and he drove the boat and was a great small boat driver. So I got to be a passenger for the first time in a while, which was really nice.
Now, mind you, a passenger who's standing in the inflatable rib with his hand on the bar with really awesome sea legs.
Yeah. Now, this is not, correct me if I'm wrong, Eric, this is not unlike what the military uses, because I know they have ribs as well.
Sure, it's the same concept. Small inflatable boats with a rigid hull.
So last week we heard just some really heartbreaking, tragic stories, but it's very important about what you do and about, you know, the sneaker waves and the riptides and all the other things that go into it. So just for people who didn't hear last week, just a quick reminder on what you do with Sea Valor, please.
Sure. Well, in regards to the riptides and the sneaker waves in particular, in January alone, I think 5 people have been swept off the rocks and the beach by sneaker waves and drowned. And we're actually part of a search and rescue that it ended up being mostly for the recovery operation for the 12-year-old that was swept out to sea. And we just think a lot more needs to be done to help educate people about the dangers of these sneaker waves and try to get these numbers down. I think the average is about 12 people every year drown in Northern California alone just by getting caught by sneaker waves. And so we're trying to do something that can get those numbers down and help prevent these tragedies from happening to other families.
And Eric, you've also designed something, which is a life ring that can be attached to a post and has a really cool logo that shows a wave overtaking someone and them falling. You can look at it and go, oh, that's not good.
Right.
Tell us about what the pilots that you have installed so far and what they do and how it would work, especially in relationship to the story of the young boy who drowned.
Sure. And sort of the idea came to fruition one night. I was having dinner with the boy's parents, and essentially they took their children to the beach one day to, you know, enjoy nature and get out from COVID, so their kids weren't playing video games. And they just had no idea the danger. They didn't even know what a sneaker wave was. The signs at the beach said, be careful, riptides, and they said, no swimming. And so the parents obviously told their kids, you know, stay out of the water. But they had no idea that just being on the beach was so dangerous. And so that was the first thing. There needs to be better signage and better education. And the second thing was, once he was swept into the ocean, they watched him for about 15 minutes as he just slowly drifted further and further away. And so had there been a life ring with 100 feet of line attached, the idea was somebody on the beach could have thrown him the life ring and then pulled him back to safety. And, you know, it's not 100% that would have saved him, but it certainly would have been better than nothing. So I think the combination between better signage and then having these life rings positioned at some of these dangerous beaches might actually make a difference and help, you know, save lives.
So, Eric, how does it work? Because obviously the you know, the police, the fire department, the Coast Guard, first responders will be on this. Where do you fit in the first responder chain? Does the Coast Guard said, hey, we would love some additional help? Or is there a hotline right to you? Are you the first one out? How does it work with Sea Valor?
No, not at all like that. In this particular, I mean, obviously the Coast Guard and the fire departments and the police departments and the sheriff departments and the harbor master, you know, they're the authorities. They're the ones in charge. What we provide is simply assistance as needed. We have a lot of people, a lot of boats, a lot of professionals, whether they're retired or on a volunteer basis, that are happy to lend their assistance in this case. So really what we do is just whatever is requested by us. And in this particular case, it was to step in after the Coast Guard had called off their search. The family had asked if we could continue searching for their son. And so that's what we did. But on a larger aspect, it would be, you know, if there's a mass casualty situation or if there's parts of the bay that for whatever reason the Coast Guard can't reach, the idea would be that we use our resources and our network of people to step in however we're requested and make sure that we don't interfere with any ongoing searches or anything like that.
Eric, you also have quite a few sets of skills. You're a pilot. You're a captain with Coast Guard license. Commercial captain, and you also have been a first responder working with the fire department, and you also went to Haiti. Can you tell us a little bit about what the, you know, with the 9/11 and the Haiti, just a little synopsis of what you did in those three instances?
So I was a firefighter and a paramedic back in the late 90s. And on 9/11, I was driving by the Pentagon when the plane hit. And I pulled over and started carrying people out. And then I spent 4 days there on the mortuary affairs team, recovering the bodies of those killed. Went up to Ground Zero for a couple weeks after that. I ended up in Haiti. I was asked to go be part of a team that was out of Johns Hopkins. So I went there for that and spent about a month and a half in Haiti.
And Eric, your skills and great personality have actually given you the opportunity to include a lot of people in the Sea Valor program, which is a new nonprofit that was started in 2019, to be involved in helping, because, you know, you're one of the skilled people. You attract skilled people. So some of the people that are with you are pretty awesome.
Yeah, and that's sort of the idea is, initially started it to help people with PTSD because it's something I feel very passionate about. I've experienced and sort of dealt with PTSD for about 20 years now. And sadly, I've known 7 people that have taken their own lives because of it. And so a few years ago, I just after a friend here in Berkeley killed himself, I just realized that something better needed to be done, that losing people like this, it was just sort of unacceptable. And that's sort of what I've dedicated the last few years of my life towards, is trying to get these numbers down and figure out ways that we can improve people's lives to the point where they're not so depressed and don't feel hopeless. And what I found was, for me, sailing and being out on the ocean and being part of a crew and having a specific tasks and learning new skills, that really helped me. And so the idea was that if it helped me, perhaps it would help other people. And so far it has. We've taken out, I think, just over 1,000 people in the last 2 years. And it was a little harder with COVID. Obviously, we had to reduce the numbers and the trips and everything. But I think the response has been pretty good. And a lot of people want to get involved. A lot of people have boats. And it seems like a great opportunity because it pairs people with boats and the experience with people that might not otherwise have those opportunities. And so it seems like it's a win-win for everybody.
Eric, is Sea Valor subsidized in any way? Do you get donations? Do you get a grant? Or is this all out of the pocket of the individual boat owners?
Thus far, it's been self-subsidized. It was something I wanted to figure out and make sure it was a working model and sort of a proof of concept. And so now we actually are going to start applying for grants and looking for donations in a way to keep it self-sufficient and make it sustainable. But thus far, it's been out of the pocket of boat owners, and the sailing community in particular is extremely generous, and we've never charged a single penny for taking people out. If people want to contribute for gas money or, you know, bring food or drinks or something like that to help, that's fine. But the sailing community in particular is extremely generous, and so far, boat owners have been more than willing and more than happy to volunteer their boats and their time to help take people out.
And also, Eric, one of the reasons I had you back on the show too was to talk about whales, because right after we talked,
yes,
I mean, you finished the show and we had a conversation on your way home, you encountered a dead whale,
yes,
and called it into the Coast Guard. And, you know, all of us who sail have been out there and, you know, have to navigate around whales so we don't hit them.
Right.
But this particular whale, tell us the story.
Right. Like you said, after we talked, I was bringing my boat back from the boatyard, and I saw what ended up being the dead whale, and I went over and I radioed it into the Coast Guard because, as you know, it's a pretty big navigation hazard to have a 30-foot whale just floating in the channel. And the Coast Guard said, thank you for the information, and that was it. And about an hour later, they called back, and they had someone from the Marine Mammal Center and somebody from NOAA and somebody from the Department of Fisheries on, and they asked if we could go back and actually take photographs of the whale and give them a little more information. So I said, sure. And we went back and took the photos. And actually one of my crew, we had towed his boat once. He has a 44-foot wooden boat, full keel. And we had towed his boat all the way from Drake's Bay back to San Francisco. And so Jesse said to the Coast Guard, he said, you know, if you want us to, we'd be happy to tow the whale, because what they wanted us to do is essentially stay with the whale until they could arrange a towboat to come, and then they tow the whale to Angel Island so they can have the scientists study it and try to figure out the cause of death. And so essentially we volunteered to tow the whale, and we learned a lot from that. It's not as easy as you might think trying to tow a whale, and to just even attach the tow line around the whale's tail took a little bit of trial and error. But we figured it out. We spent about 3 hours that day towing the whale, and then we put an anchor around its fin and anchored it overnight. And then the next morning, we finished towing it the rest of the way to the Angel Island. And the scientists came, and they performed their necropsy. And this one in particular, unfortunately, was killed by a ship strike. So that's particularly sad. And that's something I hope the community can sort of come together and brainstorm and figure out ways. This whale was number three. And then a few days later, there was actually a fourth whale that was washed up on Muir Beach. So that made it a total of four dead whales within 9 days, which is a pretty high number. And the fact that some of these are being killed by ship strikes, I'm not sure if all three or all four were killed by ship strikes, but I know at least one was. And, you know, whether it's having these container ships slow down a little bit during whale season or figuring out other ways to protect these whales a little better, I would hope that we can all get together and figure out ways to do this, because they're such incredible creatures. And to see one dead because it's been hit by a container ship is pretty heartbreaking.
There's Eric Jones with Sea Valor, and of always, you can find out more about Eric and all our topics at sailsporttalk.com. Karen and Eric, thanks for coming in. Enjoy your sail back. Have a picnic on Angel Island or whatever else you're going to do, and we'll see
you
next week.
We're going to go see the whales, actually, on our rib. So.
All right, sounds good. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break. Come on back on Sports Byline.